Okay, the recorder's on.
Okay. I'm going to call the meeting of the Aviation Advisory Commission to order. Roll call. We will mark Mr. Tolby, Mr. Topliff absent as of this time. Hopefully they might come in. Citizens' comments. I think we got one.
We do have one card, Mr. Chairman. And that is Jocelyn Quintero and CTSO, Westmac Central Campus.
Hello. Thank you for having us. We're grateful for the opportunity you guys are giving us to speak. We just wanted to share that on October 25th, down at Westmac Central, we're having our annual signature event. And this year it's going to be a trunk or treat. So each of our CTSOs are going to decorate either a trunk or, in our case, we're decorating an airplane. And we'll be handing out candy and having lots of fun events down at Westmac. So we just wanted to share that with you guys, just to let you know, and if any of you would like to come.
When is that? What time?
October 25th, from 6 to 8.
6 to 8.
Yes.
What kind of candy are you giving out?
All sorts of candy. We haven't chose ours yet, but really anything.
Now, are you guys being in costume, or are you going to?
We will be in costume.
Okay.
Yeah.
What does CTSO stand for?
Career Technical Student Organization.
Aha. Uh-huh. Very well.
Thank you.
And the question that comes to mind for me, if there's candy, you must be soliciting kids.
There will also be food trucks.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Is it? And a cars club is coming.
Do you contact schools or to bring kids in, or is that what your intent is?
Yeah, it's around schools, and then we have put it in the Glendale Star.
Okay.
Yes. Well, families are welcome. Yes.
Super.
Nice.
Yeah, nice event. Well, thank you much.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, within the last, I think it was about a week and a half ago, Westmac and the aviation program, both avionics and aircraft maintenance, had their advisory commission meeting, which I'm a part of. So we went and attended that meeting, and they're doing quite well. Enrollment is really good, both in their school program and in the adult program, and things are going good at Westmac.
Super. I appreciate having you here this evening. Are there any other speakers that would want to?
No other cards, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Then we will move on to the approval of the minutes. The commissioners had a chance to look at the minutes, and what is your, Mr. Ramey?
Move to approve.
Ramey. Motion.
Second.
A motion and second to approve the minutes as printed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. They'll stand as printed. Item 5A, airport business, Glendale Airport Display Aircraft Project. Having Mr. Tolby absent, is there anybody else that would address or has any progress reports on that?
I have nothing.
Nothing. I likewise don't. So we will move on then to 5B, Airport Restaurant, RFP.
And let me take that back. I just, for your information, I did, as Commissioner Topliff had requested, sent to him all of the sort of graphics that I had associated with it. He was working on putting something together for Vice Mayor Clark, so I apologize. I did have one slight update. Okay. So this agenda item is the airport restaurant, or this the process, and we've gone over this before. We issued the RFP on August 15th. We had our pre-offer conference with one offer attending. We had one proposal received by the deadline of 4 September. The evaluation panel met and scored the proposals on 26 September. And then the panel and the procurement division actually conducted an interview with the offeror yesterday here at the airport. And so we have... the panel has come to consensus to accept the offer as responsive and responsible and to submit to the Advisory Commission for recommendation to City Council. And what's being proposed is there's a local entrepreneur and team, and they've got strong industry support from Cisco, which is one of the commercial providers, restaurant providers here in town. Their offer is to provide a fast casual restaurant concept, possibly do mobile service here at the airport, and kind of drive around and visit to the hangars. and also possibly delivery, although that would be a down-the-road thing. They propose, as the RFP requires, to be open 6 to 2:30, 7 days a week. They expect that they will have some evenings where they'll do some special engagements, and they hope to ultimately get to a point where they're open, you know, full-time into the evening, probably no later than, you know, somewhere between 7 and 9 o'clock. They've got a strong local team, including a pretty good marketing manager who's also in the real estate business out here, but she's actually done a lot of marketing and event promotion. And also their food service manager has over 50 years of experience operating restaurants. So they want to focus. They really, the idea is that they'll actually call themselves the Chow Hall, and they want to focus on veterans and public safety folks. They've got a lot of strong network ties. The individual who's proposing is was in the Marine Corps, as well as a police officer in the Chicago area. And so he's got strong ties here in the community to both of those organizations. And a lot of what they want to do is to provide support to disabled veterans groups and things like that. One of the things they're talking about is doing some fundraising so that they can help people get to Washington, D.C., for example, through the DAV program. So it's not been proposed as a nonprofit, but the focus is more on seems to be more on service than to just coming in and making money. The group is very excited and motivated. They seem to, through their group, have a lot of connections in the community. A lot of what they're doing is to, as I mentioned here, they want to market to civic groups, service organization, clubs, and businesses. As I mentioned, one of their folks is in the real estate business and wants to actually reach out to businesses and actually offer this as a reasonable place for business lunches because of its kind of quiet. It's not, you know, you go to a place over at Westgate and it's kind of noisy. And so anyway, they seem to have a good plan. Their menu is going to focus on, you know, basic breakfast items, sandwiches, specialty items, centered around the Chicago beef sandwich, which this guy has a great recipe for. And they're very competitively priced is what they've showed us in their sample menu. And I think, you know, the combination, if they provide quality products and they keep their you know, pricing very competitive, I think that'll help build. They want to do a lot of word of mouth and social media and reaching out to clubs. For example, you know, they want to make the one guy's involved with Mustang Club, you know, and they want to have them have their meeting here. And good, because we got a lot of parking. And so anyway, we actually met with them yesterday and asked them some pretty direct and pointed questions and feel that they will have a good shot, you know, and they are the only offer. So there's that. But we also went, you know, we wanted to make sure we did the appropriate amount of due diligence. We did a lot of, you know, evaluation of their proposal, as well as asked them for some supplemental information along the way and got that a number of times, as well as doing a face-to-face interview with the team. So that's where we are. Our intention is we actually gave them the preliminary intent notice today, the intent to award. Of course, it still has to go through this process, the city council process, and we have to get them a negotiated lease. But we were comfortable, and we've given them, like I said, the intent. I've checked the references. I've made contact with three of the four references provided. I'm waiting on a voicemail return from the fourth, but everything's been positive so far. So it's basically, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, we offer the current local entrepreneur proposal that we have to you for a recommendation to the city council to approve. So.
Do we recommend an unnamed?
Well, we can. Trailer Transformations is the name of the company, okay. Being DBA as the Chow Hall. The individual's name is Thomas Hoffman, and like I said, that's his corporate entity. So this will be another of his businesses under that, Trailer Transformations LLC, and then we'll write the lease as DBA, the Chow Hall, Glendale Airport.
Is Thomas Hoffman the Marine vet?
He is.
Okay.
Yep.
And then any of the other people,
names
that you know, or
So, forgive me, I don't know their last names, the team. Tom Pritchard is their food mm-hmm. service manager. He's worked a variety of places here in town, up in Wickenburg. Lynn, and forgive me, I don't have my notes with me to remember her last name, was the real estate partner and marketing manager. And then they had a woman from Cisco, her name was Antonio, I think it was Pruer. Forgive me, I didn't bring the information with me. And then they had their attorney with them as well.
Hmm. Any other questions?
Was there any,
commissioners?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Were there any other requests or asks from the airport as far as reduced rents for any specific period of time, anything outside the norm that was in the RFP? Did they ask for anything other than that?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Zonick, no. We set an established minimum.
Correct.
We allowed people to go over that, but they bid at the minimum amount, which is about $63,000 over the 5 years of the term, and then we renegotiate. And it goes up basically about $100 a month each year. First year is at $850, second year is at $950. And up to $1,250, I think, at the top.
So nothing that they're
not. And they didn't ask for that. We actually did ask them if they would consider increasing the performance bond, and they had agreed to that. So the performance bond, which was listed in the sample lease in the RFP, was at $30,000. We're going to increase that to $50,000 just because we think it's appropriate to have a little bit more protection of the airport.
And why was that not 50 in the original offering?
You know, I don't know. I'll be honest with you, we used a sample lease from the previous time that we did it.
Did their proposal actually visit the idea about it not being a for-profit enterprise?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Ramian, yes, they did. In their proposal indicated in a couple of different ways that is their desire, is to be more of a service, to use this as a way to provide services to veterans organizations. So that was cited in the proposal in a couple of different areas.
Okay. That's kind of concerning that there is no monetary issue on their part, or I should say carrot, for which they would aspire to grow.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Ramian, I mean, I don't think that they're going to be completely nonprofit. They did give us a business model that did indicate, you know, profit within their organization, but it was at, let's say, a lower amount than some might,
normal.
You know, consider.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then just one final question. Have they, as a grouping, they have experience, but have they ever, as a partnership, worked in a restaurant or owned a restaurant before? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Zamek, they have not worked together.
Okay.
Now, do they take the facilities as is, or do they require tenant improvements, or how does that work?
Mr. Chairman, the RFP and the lease calls for them to accept the condition and the facilities as is and where is. And they've had the opportunity and actually taken advantage several times to come and visit the facilities. But no, they take the facilities as they are, and then they're not under any obligation to do any tenant improvements, and they have no immediate plans to do so. We did ask them about that.
Are there any known issues in that?
None that we're aware of. And we've kind of had our facilities folks come through it because it's been sitting for, you know, a while. Everything was working when we turned it off, and there were no significant problems. And like I said, we've done some preliminary looking it over. And one of the things we're going to do is probably replace an evaporative cooler. Actually, that is our responsibility. Some of the mechanical equipment outside their leasehold is our responsibility, but very little. So the short answer is as is and where is, and they're accepting it.
How does an evaporative cooler work? Is that a separate outside room or?
Well, no, but
this is all AC.
It is, but there's an area, and I don't know if it's the, I think it's part of the kitchen that actually is cooled by evaporative cooling. I'm sorry that I can't give you more detail.
I'm glad I'm not working in that.
Would mix in, you know, within a building.
It's,
if you mix the two. That's some, I don't know.
It is unusual.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? What would be the commission's desire?
I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the people, if they were commissioners, that's good enough an answer, that evaluated the fact that and came up with the conclusion that they were a viable and responsive offerer?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Ramian, so the first process is it comes into the procurement division. The contract specialist looks over everything and determines that it's responsive.
Mm-hmm.
And then they submit it to the panel. The panel consisted of me. There was an individual from another city department that actually works with outside vendors. And there was also a panel member who's the assistant manager at another airport, which has a restaurant and has gone through the selection process and the management process. So those were the three primary members of that did the evaluation of the proposal.
Yes.
In conjunction with the contract specialist from the procurement division. And then when we actually had our interview with them, we had two observers, one from the transportation department, one from the city attorney's office, as observers.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody from the restaurant industry or anybody could ask those kind of questions?
No.
Okay.
No. Although, as I said, from the other city department, they work with
They've done it frequently. Okay.
I worked in the food and beverage business for the first half of my life until I came there.
You knew the right questions then to
ask.
Okay. I mean, ideally, it would be great if we had more than one, but we don't. I mean, that's the reality.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
And that's one reason, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Zimek, that we actually went to. We consider that we really did due diligence to reach a level of confidence. That they have a good chance of success.
And is it? It's a simple 5-year lease.
It's a 5-year lease with
two terms.
Yeah, there are two additional renewal options on it. And at the end of the initial five-year term. At the end of the 5-year term, we can renegotiate terms. We don't have to, but we have the option to do so.
I see.
At that time, you know, essentially. Money, you know, those kinds of things. We wouldn't,
okay.
We wouldn't renegotiate a lot of the provisions within the lease.
Okay.
Is it worth considering doing another RFP, or is that not in the realm of possibility?
It's certainly. I mean, we certainly could if we felt that there was a reason not to go with this offer. In other words, we put out an RFP, and you know, we essentially said we're looking for proposals. And so if you came to the conclusion that your offer was not responsive and responsible, then you could do that. And you could do that anyway. The city has the right to just, refuse an offer regardless. The last RFP process, we had one offer. This RFP process, we had one offer.
Okay.
And so I don't know that another process would yield
much more.
Yeah.
What I do like about this, though, is there are multiple funding sources. It's not one person's bankrolling this. It appears that there's a couple of different folks, so the potential for success, if they all have a decent bankroll, at least there's more than one. You know, it's not out of I'm not trying to pay the mortgage and survive on that money.
Yeah. And Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Zimek, it is, the individual that we're contracting with is Trailer Transformation,
mm-hmm.
and it is it's Mr. Hoffman is the principal of that. So his other partners, you know, are involved. I don't know that they're monetarily contributing.
Okay, so they are not. Okay.
Yeah. And here again, that's one reason we chose to increase the performance bond.
Sure.
And at least that way it doesn't entirely mitigate the airport's risk.
Bit, yeah.
I mean, it's probably 80% of the amount of rent that we would get. So,
correct.
I mean, we would be able to
get
our money out of it, if you would. In other words, protect the city's risk.
Would you be able to describe what Trailer Transformations is? Are there venues, other ventures in the Valley?
So the individual is relatively new to, Mr. Chairman, relatively new to the city. He moved here within the last year. He's retired, as I said, law enforcement officer. He had a business back in the Chicago area, Rockford area, that did home inspections called Know Your Home.
Okay.
That was one of his businesses. The other one is his Trailer Transformations, where he's actually got a few patents pending for a different, I can't get into details because I never really asked, but it has to do with truck and trailer modification. And as I said, he did claim that he had some patents pending on some of his products. Okay.
Well, I just wondered if Trailer Transformations was mobile food service.
Yeah. No,
it's all, kind of what I.
Yeah.
When you hear that, yeah, you're
right. Yeah, I assume that he might be in some type of mobile vending business. So, okay. Any other questions?
The only reason I asked about the possibility of doing another proposal, I mean, request for proposals, is if we considered the fact that we might have missed a market somewhere. I mean, you know, did we go to the, whatever markets we went to, was that enough? Is that one reason we only got one offer? Because of our limitations?
I can't, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Ramian, I can't answer that.
Okay.
We did not market it widely. We thought that we did our standard outreach. Of course, that's publication in the paper. That's putting it on the website, sending it to the people that we knew had interest in it, and also sending it to the realtor that actually presented to us before, thinking that he might have some suggested places for it to go. I don't know. I don't know how we would. The short answer to your question is, I guess there certainly is a possibility that we could have gotten other offers if we had submitted in other locations. And we did it, you're right, the same way that we did it last time. So if you do the same thing, you're going to get the same results.
Would you think that the other restaurants in the other airports, at least within Arizona, all were aware of the fact that this is a vacant one? And
I don't know, Mr. Chairman. I know that, you know, most of the restaurants and all the airports that I'm aware of are, you know, individual. They're not, you know, they're individually operated. Deer Valley, Falcon Field, Chandler, Kingman when I was up there. And I don't know that they necessarily are looking for multiple locations. Okay. One of the operators that we did have here at the airport was the Left Seat, which had been for many years at Sky Harbor until they were displaced due to a variety of reasons, you know, not with mostly development of the northern part of the airfield. And so they had moved out here when we had vacant space. But again, that wasn't a two-location operation. That was just moving their location from there to here. So I don't know, to answer your question, I don't know that every other airport restaurant knew that there was the availability or not.
I guess my other thought too is, you know, there's not a great track record here, so even if you did go out and market it to a different, if anybody looked at the history, they may go, I mean, you know, there's, if you look at even the area, you might not pull much more even if you did. There's just not a lot of draw to this yet.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, they have, I think, a reasonably good sort of outreach strategy and marketing strategy. And it's not about just sending out mailers or, you know, they want to actually go and target some business. They want to go target organizations and also try to build things through word of mouth. They want to bring in these clubs, you know, and have the, like I said, have the car clubs come out and park all their cars and come over here and eat. And then, you know, through word of mouth and networking. And they plan to use social media quite a bit. They also have, as I said, some significant support from Cisco, the restaurant services and materials provider, that have a lot of sort of, like they have some website help and they have other things that they can, they're going to enlist their assistance. And they've got experience working with, you know, probably a high percentage of the restaurants here in the Valley knows what works and what doesn't.
Is the Cisco tie in any way offer on their part to support the, you know, kind of a nonprofit? Did you hear that or sense that in the process? You know,
their support is limited to, I mean, essentially they are service provider client.
Yeah,
so okay. when you agree, Mr. Chairman, to work with them and get your materials from them, then they provide varying degrees of support.
I see.
As you desire it.
Okay.
I'm not sure I fully answered your question.
You know, again, a big company like that whether or not they're looking to help support a veterans outreach or veterans again. It's probably not a question.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any strong connection from the Veterans Service through to Cisco. I think Cisco's more about restaurant to clients, and you know what I mean. And this is on the other side.
Sure.
But they did comment several times in the interview that we had yesterday that Cisco was excited about working with that concept and thought it was a good approach. I don't know that they're how invested. I mean, I think they're certainly supportive and invested in it.
Whether or not it would be a method for them to contribute or donate.
I don't know that process.
So.
Do you know? Is it this trailer industry or trailer
transformation LLC?
Is it a Arizona corporation? Because I'm on the corporation commission page, and I'll see either listed. Either Hoffman or the
Yeah, I don't know, but I know that he's been getting all of his permitting lined up.
Okay.
So he will have to have that taken care of. And I thought he had made the application. I thought he had actually mentioned that to me through an email.
Okay.
So I would assume that if it's not now, it will be.
Okay, I just didn't see anything on the page yet. But
if he's only been here a year, I would suspect that's all in Illinois.
That's not right. That's what I'm getting
to. I would bet that, that that's probably okay. So, any other questions? What's the commission's thoughts on that?
So we're seeking, Mr. Chairman, the approval of the advisory commission to recommend approval, ultimately the approval of the lease agreement by City Council for Trailer Transformation to operate the restaurant.
Mr. Ramey?
I move the commission recommend to the City Council to approve the lease negotiated with Trailer Transformations.
Do we have support for that motion?
Second. No. I think you go on record for that.
I'll second it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion on the motion? If not, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously.
Okay. Thank you very kindly, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. So we will keep you posted. Our intention is to have the lease drafted within probably the next week or so and start working through the process of getting on the council agenda. I'm assuming that we'll be able to make either the late November or early December council agenda. But we'll keep you, we'll let
is
you know.
Is there an anticipated opening date if everything goes the way you...
He has indicated that they should be able to be operating within 30 days of a lease approval.
Okay.
Once we're moving to this, you know, he's been doing things along the way.
Gotcha.
And realizing he's at risk. And then now once we give the intent, he can step that up a little bit more. There's certain things he can't do until the actual lease is done. Example, the TPT. A permit, but he's already done the preliminary work on that.
Okay.
But his intention is to be up and running within about 30 days of execution of the lease.
Sounds good.
Maybe we'll hit
January breakfast.
Yeah, have New Year's.
All right.
We'll move on to item 5C, the airport gate 2.
So, Mr. Chairman, at the commission's request, I reached out to our traffic engineering group and had some discussion with them, and we've come up with some immediate preliminary options, and these are very preliminary, and I'll explain them each as we move through here. And then the traffic engineering group is intending to come to one of our next meetings, either November or December, to provide perhaps some detail and additional information. So here's what we looked at and said this could be done initially. So you've got the green diamonds there. And that would be to add a wider lane. Is anybody familiar with what's called a Michigan left? So Michigan left is a U-turn and then a left turn. Or a U-turn and then a right turn, actually. So the idea is that along that landscaped area that's just north of the Gate 2 drive entrance, you could add some additional lane width that would allow the turning traffic to make a U-turn And then at up where the top green arrow is, by the exit of Westmac, you could actually create an entrance, a true radiused entrance section. That exit is designed in such a way as that it's not, the geometry of it is not designed for an entrance area, it's only for an exit. So you would have to do two things. You would put the U-turn, add the additional lane for U-turn, and then add an entrance area at the top. So that's one option. Second option would be to the yellow diamond, triangle, is to create a new turn lane. There's probably room between the intersection and where the turn lane at the Gate 2 drive entrance starts, where you could actually cut through the median and then actually cut through also the... So you would essentially create a new turn lane and a new entrance kind of in the middle of the parking area up there. That's the second option that came up. Third option, where the red triangle is, that's currently the emergency exit gate or the emergency vehicle gate for the campus site. So that allows fire department, emergency medical response to access through there. Another option would be to reconfigure the campus traffic flow and make that the actual entrance and exit, or at least the entrance, and then create another emergency exit gate elsewhere. Or relocate it. So that's another option. And that area, that where that is, you're currently the turn lane, the left turn lane, or the center turn lane on Glendale Avenue still exists at that point. Okay, so you would have the ability to be able to make a left turn from Glendale.
Without blocking?
Correct.
Okay.
Right. It's the median area, the raised median area, starts just beyond that.
Gotcha.
So that's a third option that we looked at. And then the fourth option would be to eliminate the use of Gate 2 to other than emergency and have all traffic accessing the airport go through Gate 3. Gate 3 is not on here. Gate 3 is about several hundred feet to the south of Gate 2, and it's actually a private gate. It was a gate that was installed and paid for by one of the hangar owners associations. Mm-hmm. So right now that gate is exclusive to them. Mm-hmm. But in the authorization that we gave them to do that, the airport has the right to reclaim that gate. And we'd have to put a different gate operator on it. It's a little bit different than what we use, but it's not. So that's an option that we actually close Gate 2. And so the airport traffic would then be going down to the next drive entrance and using Gate 3 to access the airfield. And that would eliminate some of the, eliminate the conflict, at least partially eliminate the conflict, not entirely. Those are the four options that we just sat in the engineer's office and looked at it and said, okay, what could we do? And she said, well, we could do this, that, and the other thing. So it's our intention to, you know, do a little bit more study. I mean, we're not going to have a lot of detailed information because, as you can imagine, most of these, I mean, restricting Gate 2 and opening Gate 3 is probably the least expensive. But adding lanes and moving, creating new drive entrances and cutting through landscaped areas and all that, those are relatively expensive. And, of course, we don't necessarily have a budget for it. But we're going to do some additional analysis, maybe come up with some graphic information, and then we'll come back and give you further information on this item.
And so it would fall to the airport's budget for whatever happened.
Well,
none of Westmec's involvement or...
And that I don't know. Because I'll be honest with you, Mr. Chairman, I don't know exactly what agreements we have, you know, what we have consented to or not consented to or allowed or not allowed or whether we have the ability to change the agreement or rescind any agreements. So that... To get to that next step where we start talking about whether they participate, I mean, if you looked at the red option there where we reconfigured the gate, that would pretty much be on them, and they'd have to be willing to do that in a variety of ways, and they'd have to find a way to meet the emergency vehicle requirement somehow. So all of the other items are actually on airport property, and yes, they're being done to alleviate a situation supporting the Westmec traffic. So I don't know, I can't really answer clearly one way or another, but all those things are going to be looked at in the process.
As I left the last meeting and talked about this, I drove out I mean, that was the immediate thing jumped out at me, that that out on the Glendale Avenue looked like the most logical thing. You know, a front door entrance mm-hmm. would seem most logical. And of course, I hadn't seen what, you know, what the median break might be. But, you know, that seems like that would be a, you know.
Stops all the traffic.
It just seems odd the way the traffic pattern was developed to begin with. You know, how on earth did that come about?
Clearly.
You know, that's the thing that kind of, when it was described, I had no idea how they're coming and going.
Yeah.
But well, it just,
that's the problem. I don't think it was developed.
Well, okay. So somebody came up with the idea that exists there today.
Well,
and it doesn't seem like a very logical.
Right.
A logical. Design
right.
to have all the traffic filtering through down through a parking lot like that
right.
in order to access school. You know, it's, you know, bringing them in down the Har Parkway, then back again and around the park. That just didn't seem logical. So
no.
it looked like that gate out on the Glendale might be the most. Now, I have to say that, you know, as I look at it, and our airport, our aircraft display project again. That's going to, you know, if there's some way to incorporate
yeah.
at that same time
that access into the to the display area, there might you know, if the two of them could be solved at the same time, that would be great.
Correct.
Now, who is there to either bless or veto any of these ideas? Who does that?
Well, certainly traffic engineering okay. would have to, just as they have to approve any development. You know, and the access and lane usage and all that stuff. So traffic engineering in our transportation department would be one of the approval processes. And then, of course, if there were construction involved, it would be would have to go through development services, the standard process. And then as far as the airport goes, really, I guess what it boils down to is, I guess it would be, you know, the airport manager, the transportation director, sort of that chain of command, if there were funding available to approve doing something like this.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's something that actually we could, you know, we have the ability to use funds. The airport has the ability to use funds that are in the Glendale Onboard sales tax fund. You know, where now I'm not, those are approved by others than me. But the point is that we have in the past and will in the future use some of those funds. So there's the possibility of having some funding to do some of this.
But those that developed these four came from the folks that would either approve or disapprove.
Yeah, it was the traffic, the city traffic engineer. Her name's Debbie Albert, and I sat down with her a week or so ago to go over this.
Alrighty.
The number two option, the yellow one there, that still though brings them back into the, I mean, it
just, does.
It brings them back into that parking lot just a little further down, correct?
Right.
So
yes.
Some of them leave you in the parking.
Yeah, the only thing it does is eliminate the conflict at that drive entrance and gate two. But yes, you're right. It doesn't fully solve the. And it is, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, it's certainly an unusual approach. And I assume that there was some reason when this was developed, you know, I mean, it had to be approved. It had to be approved within the project in order for the project to continue. So, and transportation is usually fully involved in those approval processes. So,
yeah.
So anyway, we'll
more to come. Huh?
Yeah, more to come. We'll come back with more information and keep looking at it.
I'm a little curious what Randy has to say about it.
No, I think he's right. You know, when they did this plan for the West Met, they had to have gone for permits and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Most developments, you would have to go through some obnoxious amount of crazy things to get entrance and exits.
Mm-hmm.
This one seemed like, okay, well, we'll just throw a thing here.
We've got to get them in somehow. A
couple of things there, and oh well, and two people sat around to deal and smoked some pot and had a few whiskeys and said, yeah, that works, and let's do it.
Yeah.
And it sounds funny, but that's probably, that makes more sense, because like you said, this makes no sense.
Yeah.
Who came up with this idea? This is the most harebrained thing I ever saw.
It's a bizarre thing, but I see some similar things around town you know, I think, goodness sakes, you know.
Really?
Yeah. So, more to come.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if you'd indulge me, I wanted to, I meant to do this at the beginning. I made a minor error in the agenda. Item E, which is our advisory commission chair and vice chair recommendations, I wrote in there recommendations for service in 2021, and that should actually say 2020. So I noticed that after we had already published the agenda, and I apologize for the error, but I just wanted to get it into the record that that I had made an error. So here we are.
Do we want to talk about 2020 census outreach?
So it's my great honor to welcome Jenna Goad to talk to us about the census process for the 2020 census. And she's here from our public affairs team, and she's going to share a little bit with us. So please welcome Ms. Goad.
Thank you, sir. And pardon me, Joan, should I stand up at the front? Is that the best?
You can do whatever your little heart desire that is agreeable with our chair.
Let me hand you a packet there.
Are you going to have things on the screen? Or
I do, yes.
So then we probably want you at that end of the table.
Thank you. Yes, we're
not there.
Sure.
Yeah, that way we'll get good.
That way we can see you and what you're presenting at the same time.
Yes. All right, if you'll give me just one moment, I'd like to get used to the guests that we have with us as well.
Bless you.
All right. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission, thank you very much for allowing me to come and talk with you tonight about the city's outreach plans for the upcoming 2020 census. And I also want to thank you for your service to the city and to the community by serving on this board. I know that everyone has very busy lives. There's plenty of other things I'm sure you could be doing on your Wednesday evenings. And so thank you for volunteering to be part of this group and for impacting the community in that way. It's exactly because I know that you are involved members of the community that I wanted to come and talk to you and also to the other boards and commissions about the upcoming 2020 census. So we're going to talk a little bit about what the census is, why it's important, and then end with sort of what you can do to help us to make sure that our census count is as successful as possible in the upcoming year. So, Joe, if you'd go ahead and start with this. So, what is the census? Just a quick show of hands, maybe. Who remembers, did they fill out their questionnaire in 2010? Mm-hmm. Yes? A couple? Okay, all right, good. That's good. And you're all, of course, engaged members of the public, so I would expect nothing less. But, unfortunately, there are, you know, folks who, for various reasons, do not respond to the questionnaire, either because they're afraid or, frankly, they're just busy or they don't think it's very important. So it's our job to help to reach those people and help them understand why it's important, that it is safe, and ultimately to motivate them to respond to it. So what is the census? The Constitution mandates that a census be done every 10 years to count every person living in the United States, every person who is living here as of April 1st of 2020. And what's at stake? A lot. So there's over $650 billion annually of federal funding that gets allocated to the states and then on down to the cities based on these population numbers. And the numbers are also used to do the electoral districts. So everything from our city council districts, state legislative districts, and up to Congress, these numbers also decide how many seats Arizona has in the U.S. House of Representatives. So right now we have 9, but as everyone knows, the state has been growing quite a bit, and so there's a good chance that we may pick up a 10th seat after this next count, which is good because then that means we're getting our appropriate representation in Washington. Next, please. Thank you, Joe. So when is the census? Census day is April 1st of 2020. So what that means is they want to count people where they are living on April 1st. But preparation and work for the census starts far, far in advance of the spring of next year. So the Census Bureau has in fact already started to hire temporary workers. And you may have noticed there are census employees already who have been going through some neighborhoods to do address canvassing. So to make sure that their address list, their mailing list, reflects the houses and the units that are actually there on the street. So they've been doing that. this fall. I think they're wrapping up with that. And then come March, residents will start to receive notifications in the mail from the Census Bureau. So that's when you'll actually start to see things, you know, hitting your mailboxes, and you'll start to see things at your home. And then you need to respond by the end of April in order to be counted. And Joe, if you hit the next one. But this time, in 2020, it's going to be a little different. Because for the first time this year, you'll be able to respond to the census online. So the first mailing that they will send you is essentially an invitation to go online and complete the questionnaire. It won't actually be that paper form that you've seen in the past. And that's really, it's really exciting. There's some, you know, some pros and some cons. It makes it very convenient. You can respond to it, you know, essentially on your time when it's convenient for you. It also can be a tremendous savings to all of us as taxpayers, because the census spends a lot of money hiring those employees to follow up and to come to people's doors if they haven't responded. And so the more people that respond online, that self-respond, then that's fewer people that the census has to hire and send out. So ultimately, it saves all of us money as taxpayers. There will still be the option to respond by phone or to request a paper questionnaire. So you don't have to do it online. That'll just be the sort of initial way that they'll invite you to participate. And then if you haven't completed it that way, then they'll follow up with some of these other options. And so then, if you get to the end of April and you have not already responded, that's when the census is going to start sending folks door to door to try to verify that information with you in person. So not only, as I mentioned, is that costly for taxpayers because it involves a lot of manpower, but for me personally, I find that to be a lot less convenient too, right? I'd rather fill out the questionnaire on my own time than have a government employee come to my door. So next one, thank you. So what about privacy and security? I know a lot of people have questions about this. First and foremost, the information collected by the census can only be used for statistical demographic purposes. It cannot be shared with any other federal agency, law enforcement, et cetera. It is against federal law for that information to be shared with any other groups. It's also important to know that census employees are purely, would be asking for general demographic information in terms of the number of people in your household, their gender, their age, race and ethnicity, but they would never ask for something like a social security number, banking information. They won't ask for any sort of donations or gifts or anything like that. So if by chance someone comes to your door and they're asking for any of those things, you will automatically know they are not official Census Bureau employees. And the other thing, folks that are official Census Bureau employees, should one come to your door, will have an official Census Bureau ID. They will also have a laptop and a tote bag that has the census logo on it. So if they have, you know, those things, they're required to show you their ID if you ask to see it. You'll know that is a legitimate government employee that you can feel safe sharing information with. To the next one, please.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay, so what's in it? What's in it for me, or what's in it for us, right? For all of us as a community. Each person counted represents about $3,000 in state, federal, and regional funds every year that would come to our community. So when you think about the fact that this is only done every 10 years, those numbers are locked in for 10 years, that's really $30,000 per person over the term, you know, that those numbers are used for. And the cities rely on this funding to provide all sorts of very important programs: public safety, education, roads, healthcare. And then also because here in Arizona, our state shared revenue is divided out based on those numbers, and that money goes into the city's general fund. So quite literally, that money supports every program and service within the city, everything from libraries, parks and recreation, code compliance, anything throughout the city that receives general fund dollars. A portion of that is derived from these numbers. And so when members of our community don't respond or don't get counted, that means that those dollars, you know, can go to other states and other cities. And personally, I'd like to see it come here to Glendale. So, next slide, please. And so,
we'd like to see that money come right here to the airport.
That's right, to the airport.
Just for the airport.
Just to the airport.
Yeah, let's be honest.
And so, in order to make sure that our count is successful and we get everybody possible counted, we need your help. As I mentioned, I know that you are involved, active members of the community. And so here's my request for you. First and foremost, please fill out the questionnaire when it comes in March. And remind everybody that you know to do it too. Friends, family, neighbors, employees, coworkers, anyone and everyone should be encouraged to complete the questionnaire. If there are other community groups or,
But only if they live in Glendale?
Well,
yeah, we don't want
to discourage the Phoenix.
That's you know, if they live in Arizona, we want the money to come to the state and then can get distributed. So if you're involved in any community, nonprofit groups, HOAs, churches or other faith-based organizations, anything like that, please invite us to come out and to speak to those groups. No matter the size, I'll come to a backyard barbecue if you invite me. Anything and everything, please send that to me or to Joe, and he can pass it along to me, so that we can get out and we can talk to more people about the census, why it's important, and why they should participate. You can also visit, there's a regional website. We have partnered with the other cities here in the county. So you can visit iCount2020.info to see more information and to sign up to get reminders and notifications of additional information as we get closer to March. And I did mention the Census Bureau has started to hire temporary employees. They have, hundreds, if not thousands, actually, of positions that they're trying to fill here in the Phoenix area. They've got very flexible hours and flexible schedules, and they pay above minimum wage. So if you or if you know anyone that might be interested in that, I would encourage you to visit 2020census.gov/jobs. And the more folks from our community that we can have being employed by the Census Bureau, the more likely those people are to know our community, to be familiar to our community members. So that's a good thing. And then last but not least, advocate for participation in the census, and especially with groups that are at the most risk of going undercounted. So children under the age of 5, seniors, folks that are low income, folks that don't speak English proficiently, those are all groups that are likely to be undercounted, but are very important in terms of our overall, success rate in making sure our number is as accurate as possible. So with that, Mr. Chairman, there's my information there. And of course, you can get in touch with me through Joe if you have any questions, or if you do have one of those groups that you'd like to invite us to come out and speak with.
Do you have any idea what a census costs?
A lot.
Maybe do that number ever.
What it costs the federal government?
Yeah, in total, what a census costs.
I know that it's in the billions.
In the billions, yeah. I was wondering how much of that distributed money is actually spent. Yeah, getting.
I
would bet it is some. That's fine.
I want to say I saw maybe something in the six-ish $6 billion range.
Wow.
Jenna, is the city going and doing these presentations in Spanish in the especially the South Glendale community,
Yeah, so that's a good question. We have not yet. We are working on producing some of the materials in Spanish as well. And then we're going to be doing a lot of targeted outreach where we work with nonprofits to go into those communities where we know there's a higher concentration of those groups that are
especially with it being a web-based. Okay. This year, if you can submit it online, that should take some of that fear that these folks have. To at least be counted, because again, the census is counting everybody, correct? I mean, it does it. So,
yeah.
If
everybody.
They can go online and present, and I think the idea of picking up another house seat is key.
That's a big
deal.
Big incentive.
I would think so.
Okay. Any other questions?
Very
thank
good.
You so
Mr.
much, Jenna.
Thank you.
You bet.
And those of you who are on other boards and commissions, you will be seeing the same presentation coming soon to a board or commission near you. And when do you think you might come back to visit us?
I would like to come back in March, give or take in March, just to follow up and remind you and to do, you know, last minute kind of push, reminder to reach out to everyone.
Well, we'll look forward to having you back.
Thank you, John.
All right, Commissioner Ruby has stepped out for just a second and just asked if I would open up item C, which is the nomination for the chair and vice chair for 2020.
And so, members of the commission, as you recall, the Government Services Committee established three new SOPs this year for all boards and commissions. And the purpose of this one, there were three. One had to do with training, one had to do with setting annual goals for the commission, and then this one has to do with chair and vice chair recommendations. And it states that the purpose is to establish a uniform process for the selection and appointment of chairs and vice chairs for all boards, commissions, and committees unless otherwise specified in code or statute. And there are some commissions and boards that actually have other requirements for chair and vice chair. So this slide just kind of goes over the process. The procedure, so you the SOP stated that each board and commission would put this item on the agenda in their October meeting. It would require a motion and action for each seat, both chair and vice chair. Then the staff liaison, that's me, gets to forward the recommendation to the city clerk no later than 31 October. The recommendations are then considered by the Government Services Committee in November, and then the City Council will consider the Government Service Committee recommendations in December. And then, as has been standard, the appointments will be made at the January Council meeting, and then appointments take effect in February at the February Advisory Commission meeting. So this language at the bottom was actually right out of the recommendation that said this is just a sample motion that would be, you know, that I move to recommend blank as chair or vice chair, because as I said, it does require two separate actions, and for a one-year term beginning February 1st, 2020. So that's the purpose of the SOP that was newly established, the process that we're going to go through. And so then we are now at the point where we will, one assumes that either those that have a desire to serve can express that, and or if you individually have a desire to nominate someone else, certainly that would be.
I guess before we do that, though, is there anyone rotating off based on the time they've been on the commission?
Tenure on the commission. Do we know? You know, I don't know what everybody's tenure is. I don't know if I'm even up for.
I do, but I have it in my office. I don't have it with me. I know that. I think
I'm off.
Yeah, Mac actually comes up for his 2-year term. I know that Randy is good through 2021. I can go actually to my office and.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah, that way
we don't inadvertently nominate somebody who's gone before he gets there.
Second time through on that because it's two-year terms, right? That you can be appointed for.
Yeah, this is my first
time. Okay, so you can still be a nominee or reappointed then.
But has that been changed?
That's right. Because
when I first got on and I saw some folks right ahead of me, and again, I'm glad we're doing that. This process now available, you know, because again, I had just been on a month or two, and I get a phone call from council office, somebody there said, "Do you want to be vice chair of the commission?" I said, "Whoa, you know, Walt Cheney's doing a good job as far as I know. Why would you be asking me?" And I sure don't want to step on Walt Cheney. I mean, you know, he's more dignified than I am, and so why are you asking me? Anyway, it was weird that I got that call, and again, it was just out of the blue, and you know, had no idea who was making the recommendation. So, I'm glad for this process.
And, it's a much cleaner process.
How long have you been on, Randy? Do you remember?
I served a 2-year term and then reappointed for another 2 years.
Another 2-year term, okay. Yeah.
So we'll be finishing in whatever it is, February, the first year of the second term.
The second term, okay.
Okay. All righty. Yeah, and again, I don't know what it was changed to. Do you know what the...
what the appointment terms are?
The appointment terms are now? Because I know it's expanded.
January or February. Does it still have that two-year appointments and then you rotate off that board, or can you be nominated...
Repetitiously.
For a sixth year, basically.
Yeah, Chair Commissioner, I don't think there's a limit anymore.
That's what I was understanding it to be. Because that's when I realized that, and particularly when I first got on the commission here, we didn't have full seats. And they hadn't had for a long time, and they're having a difficulty getting anybody in. And I said, part of the problem is you're kicking them out when they just have basically become familiar with this and the process and all that. And you're kicking them out the door.
And I said, over, and now we're going to kick them out.
So, yeah, that's what I was thinking, that it had been taking the restrictions on terms off, except for I think there's a couple of commissions where they might do that still, but at least on most, maybe not. So that if anybody is willing, and I don't know that you're aspiring to, we need to get those names out on the table. It won't hurt my feelings if I'm not holding the gavel anymore. So,
well, do you want to?
Yeah,
I certainly don't mind. I mean, I will do that, yeah. Oh. But if there's others that aspire to do that, I'm certainly willing to step aside.
No. I'm not seeing the hands fly right up here, Larry.
Well, we're going to see who's eligible.
You got paid. Okay. So, currently, Chair Rovey's term expires in 2020, 1/31/2020. Vice Chair Tolby, 2021. Commissioner Ramian, 2020. Commissioner Kruger, 21. Commissioner McCall, 2020. Commissioner Topliff, 21. And Commissioner Zemek, 21. So currently expiring this year, we have Chair Rovey, Commissioner Ramian, and Commissioner McCall. And we are hopeful, if I may say, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, that those of you who are expiring would consider staying for an additional term.
Joe, I think I was contacted by Julie up at the clerk's office, who said that very thing.
Yeah. That's.
And she asked, would I consider re-upping, essentially, and I said yes, and that was the end of the conversation. I haven't heard anything since.
And me as well.
I'm sorry.
Likewise here. Yeah, and I had agreed to do it again.
Your retention bonus is on the way.
Well, I heard that in the fine print for the.
It's a life appointment.
No. In the fine print for the council and mayor pay increase, we're going to get doubled too.
Okay, good.
Oh, good.
Or at least a 50% bump.
Yeah, well, I'd take 50%. Okay, well, then we'll open the floor for suggestions, recommendations. Or
I motion to recommend Mr. Rovey retain his position as chairman.
Second.
Any other discussion?
No, that's enough discussion for me.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Then that'll get passed.
I don't get to vote, but I'd say aye too.
Okay.
It doesn't mean anything, but I let you know I'm supportive.
Okay. Well, then let's open that up for vice chairman.
Again, do we know?
I don't
Mr.
know.
Mr. Tobey's.
Well, he's through 21, I believe. Is that
no,
right?
I just meant this.
Oh, whether he would accept
he
that.
Anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. Yeah.
Well, like you said, if he wasn't here, he's going to get
he's going to be.
That's right. That's the perfect way to get railroaded is be absent. So.
It's his own damn fault.
So we motion to recommend Mr. Tolby as vice chair and retain his position.
I'll second that motion if I can.
Right.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Unanimous. Then we'll ask Mr. Tolby.
Okay. That went pretty smooth.
All right.
Taking longer to get the papers.
I know.
Yeah.
What a team.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we'll move into six, staff report.
That's me. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, just quickly go over my, I don't have a lot, but I do have a few things. Financial report, we're 25% through the fiscal year, and these are the numbers that have been reported to us out of our Munis system. Sometimes I wonder. But airport revenues today, $289,352.40, which is 33.85% of our proposed budget for the year, a little over a third through a quarter of the year.
That's a good.
It is. So, airport annual approved expenses through the year is closer to our 25%. We're at $178,335.26, or 20.86% of the budget. That's our financial situation. Aircraft operations are up 5%. We had 6,633 operations this September versus 6,336 last September. We're probably trending a little under the 95,000 mark for the calendar year, but I think it's going to be somewhere between what we did last year at 91,305 and the 95,000. But traffic, we did have a couple of down months this year, but as a rule, every month has been up from the previous year. And then for general airport updates, I will share with you that we have a staff update. We've changed our hours only slightly for coverage, airport operations coverage hours. Hours on Saturday and Sunday, we've gone to, our tower is open from 7 in the morning until 7 in the evening on weekends, whereas on weekdays we're open from 6 in the morning until 8:30 in the evening. Mm. So we haven't changed our weekday coverage, but our weekend coverage, we actually have changed our coverage to tower hours, 7 to 7, and actually it's a little bit beyond that. And one of the reasons we did that is we had a new shift bid, and we offered, for the person that has to work second shift, we offered them a or one of the people, we offer them a 4:10 shift. Okay. And so they're still working weekends, but they get 3 days off. Yeah. And we also have had a reclassification, a position reclassification within our staff. As you know, the staff here at the airport is small but mighty. There's the airport manager, Roxanne Alexander, who's our management assistant, Jim Gum, who's the supervisor, and then we have three service workers, airport service workers, Kirby Hubin, Ryan Millsaps, and Andrew Gonzalez. And Mr. Gonzalez recently was reclassified from a service worker to a senior service worker. And so he takes on a little bit more responsibility. And so that's another reason that we kind of changed our hours around a little bit. We have that more senior person working and at times when we don't have other management supervision on the airport, which is the weekends. So minor changes. But congratulations to Mr. Gonzalez. He's done a great job I think he's been here about 6 or 7 years, something like that. He's done a great job, and he's stepped up and taken on a lot of responsibility. And our supervisor's been able to delegate some of his assigned duties to him. So it's been good for the airport all the way around. No progress this month on the rules and regulations update, and I apologize for that. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to get to that before I leave the airport, but I will make sure that our next airport manager has the adequate information to continue that process. There's just been too many other things going on for me at the airport right now to leap into that. We are developing a couple projects, and I can't remember if I mentioned this at the last meeting or not, but one is related to an improvement to our access control system, which is our vehicle gates that offer access to the airfield. And what we'd like to do, right now they're not networked. And I may have mentioned this at the last meeting, but I don't recall. They're not currently networked. In other words, we have to every so often go out and load information to each controller board at the, there's 5 or 6 vehicle access gates. And so a network system would allow us to be able to update those from the office as changes are made. It also would allow us to gather information from those gates in real time. It's not a for sure thing, but it's something we're investigating. It's something we've included in our airport capital improvement program, but we also think we may actually see if we can do that with local funds. So we're looking to do that. We're also looking to do a landscape conversion around the terminal and convert some of our turf We had the environmental group, as well as we had a couple people come out and kind of looked over the area with us, and they're going to provide us with some ideas for conversion of landscape to more water friendly, lower water use, and that kind of stuff. So, you know, not only do we have to water the grass, we have to cut the grass. And while grass is nice and we may retain a little bit, we're looking to.
Is there a way to look at the artificial turf versus
to keep that certainly green? Certainly it would be something that we could look at, and there's a lot of great products. I used some when I was at Sky Harbor. So that's the two projects that we're looking at right now. We're also we've been doing some work on Glen Harbor right away. As I mentioned previously, the right of way, the landscaped areas up to this point, or at this point, the right-of-way group with the city of Glendale has only serviced the right-of-way landscaping essentially to the airport. Mm-hmm. They've agreed to accept the southern portion down to the water treatment plant. As some of you may have noticed, that landscaping doesn't get very much service. And so we're doing that. We're also, as I mentioned last month, we're including the pavement into the city's pavement maintenance program, which it hasn't previously been. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to allow us, I mean, we do have some of that that's available for funding, as I've mentioned before. You can get funding for landside pavements through either FAA or ADOT program, but they prioritize quite low because those dollars are much better. The consideration is that money is better spent inside the fence on airside pavements. So just a couple of things that we're working on. As far as the grants go, I've been keeping you up to date on that. The ADOT $1.62 million grant has been City Council approved, finalized, sent back to them. We're just waiting for them to return the signed document to us. It's a little interesting. ADOT sends it to us, we approve it and sign it, send it to them, they sign it, send it back. The way the FAA does it is they sign it, send it to us, we sign it, you know, it's... But anyway, we're moving along. It's just a matter of time until they sign that, then that money will be available. The FAA $8.99 million grant has been City Council approved, finalized, and we're actually ready to draw the funds. So as soon as we get notice from the FAA that the money's in the account, our folks downtown in the finance department do it all electronically, and we'll get that $9 million all in one fell swoop. And then the match grant for the $280,000, which is the match to the $9 million FAA grant, will go to what they call PPAC, the Prioritization Committee, and then to the State Transportation Board, should go to the State Transportation Board in the month of November. So probably by the end of the year, we should get that grant available to us to match the FAA grant. We've also filed our, the FAA requires us to annually file a DBE, Disadvantaged Business Enterprise, report. Which we haven't had any construction projects lately, so it's kind of a boring report, but that's been taken care of. And then just to round out the rest of the information, zero noise complaints this month. Yeah. Yay! Yeah. Compared to the seven we had from one person last month. Also, as I mentioned previously, on the 1st of November, they've got me speaking at a Chamber of Commerce fuel event. That's going to be at the off-the-cuff venue downtown at on November 1st. Any of you who are involved with the Chamber of Commerce may know about that, so we'll have an opportunity to tell folks about the airport. Next Saturday, actually a week from Saturday, on the 26th of October, the Experimental Aircraft Association is having another pancake breakfast, which is available for fly-in or drive-in. And so please come out and enjoy yourself and have some breakfast. And then a reminder, most of you have had the information submitted, and you've actually got your request back for your hockey tickets on the 16th of December. So I'll look forward to seeing those of you at the hockey game that are available to go. So that's on 19 December, and I can't remember it's the Maple, not the Maple Leafs. I can't remember who they're playing. Okay,
it will be cold.
It will be. I like it like that, though. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, that is my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, sort of. I know we're not supposed to take any action, so.
Any questions of the Director?
Good. We're off the hook.
Yes, I have one question.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Could you go back a slide or two? Okay, right there. Now,
you say airport projected annual revenue of 854. Is that based on the year-to-date number being transposed out to reflect 12 months at that rate?
So each year during the budget process, the city's budget is approved by the city council, which is based on numbers that we've submitted. And so we have, based on previous year's performance and mm-hmm. how much we've spent or earned, and sometimes we will include some projected increase in the earnings if there's CPI adjustments or whatnot. But anyway, so we base this number essentially on past performance, on the trend that we're following. So this was approved, submitted. We probably submitted this number last December, and it went through the city council budget process, was ultimately passed probably in May or June. I hope, Mr. Commissioner Ramian, that answers your question. But it's really based on what we spent last year. As an example, last year we had... total revenue funding last year, 832,553.41. So that was our number for last year. So it's up a little bit this year. And most of the time, those changes come from changes that are we don't make a decision on. They're submitted through the HR department because every year people's wages go up, benefits go up, things like that change. Sure. So most of the time when there's a change in our revenue or expense stream, it had, well, with the revenue or the expense stream anyway, it usually comes from the HR department or through the budget office. Mm-hmm. So like I said, last year we did 832. I'm trying to look here. Our earned revenue at the airport last year was $697,760, which was one of our best years, maybe our best year ever. Which required only $134,793 contribution from the general fund. So each year we're closing that gap. In the years past, there have been times when it's been over $200,000 that have had to come into the airport fund from the general fund. So basically these numbers are based on what we've done last year and what we expect to change, and then we submit that through the budget process.
Okay. So that number is basically a budget number that was...
Prior years.
Yeah. What in the revenue stream, other than the rentals, is there anything significant?
Rentals is probably our largest component. And I don't have the detailed breakdown with me, but it's something like between $250,000 and $300,000.
Well, I'm not looking for numbers, but what are those things? What are some of the things that may be variables in that revenue stream that don't jump out at me?
Really, it's as things progress. It's more about our growth than it is. I mean, we're not generally going backwards. So when we talk about variables, typically we're talking about going forward. And so those are typically either adjustments, inflationary adjustments. Many of our leases have consumer price index adjustment. And then also we have, there's new business. In other words, over the last few years, we've released leases for, you know, since I've been here, two new hangars, and we'll potentially have another one. So there's additional revenues.
But what items other than leases, lease rental income, are there in that revenue stream?
There's fuel flow. So we get 10 cents a gallon on fuel, which is not a big percentage.
Yeah.
We actually, last year, I think, made about $90,000 in rents from the suites in this terminal building. That's a significant source of our revenue. We have other fees, like businesses that pay fees that operate here on the airport for their use, what we call SASO, Specialized Aviation Service Operation Permits. There is usually an annual contribution from the Long Family Foundation.
Right.
Our open tie-down, so the tie-downs that we rent out on the field, those have been, you know, those do ebb and flow depending on whether we're full or less full, or fuller or less fuller. Trying to think of the other significant revenue. So those are the main, you know, when you lump those together, those are the main ones. And we also have some facility leases. For example, the FBO actually is not a land. Our land rentals are somewhere in the 200 $250,000 to $300,000 range, and then we have facility rental. The FBO, for example, by itself is about $50,000 annually for their rent.
Is that all he pays is facility and, rental, or is there a percentage of his business or anything?
No, we do not get a percentage of their gross. Okay. We do get fuel flow and the facility rental. Okay. And I say that we don't get a percentage of their, I'd have to actually research that lease a little closer. It's not significant. We may get a small percentage of their, you know, 1 or 2% of their maintenance services, but I'd actually have to research that a little bit further to know that, to say that precisely.
All right. Thanks.
And I know that this was from the report. We weren't supposed to answer questions, but it was also, this financial information was presented at another section of our.
Sure. Okay. Any other questions, Director? If not, not having anybody here from Luke, we'll bypass that one. Commission comments and suggestions. Mr. Ramian, anything?
Nothing for me, sir.
Bud? Randy?
Yep.
Mac? Any future agenda items you'd like to see on our business?
Yeah, the only thing maybe, and again, just because of the comments made at council meeting with Vice Mayor Clark really commenting about selling off the land, I'd like to maybe know, it was just this last meeting, maybe even just what land, and I'd like just to know a little bit more what are we talking about selling off. But that was something that was brought up. She brought up several pieces of land and properties that she would have interest in selling off from the city, and made express comments regarding the land around the airport. So I'd just like to know a little bit more about
what that entails. Okay.
So I'll call that like an airport land analysis presentation, where we will share with you both the history of the acquisition. This is all in our airport layout plan, actually.
Okay.
The history of the acquisitions, how many acres in total, how many acres we got here, there, and everywhere, as well as what the proposed uses under our current master plan and an airport layout plan will be.
That'd be wonderful.
Good.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anyone else?
No. I would just comment, Mr. Chairman, that we will in February have a agenda item where under that new SOP from the Government Services Committee, we will actually be setting sort of a work plan, an annual work plan for the commission and what we would like to achieve over the next year. So the idea is that each commission will sort of establish at the beginning of the year what things they would like to accomplish in that year. We'll have a little bit more information on that. Probably, maybe we'll try to do that in the January meeting or the December meeting. We'll talk a little bit more about exactly what that SOP says, so everybody can get their juices flowing for the agenda item.
That's where we reappointed you. We knew how big that
was. I was going to say, maybe I except too soon. Okay, if that's all, then the next meeting, November 20th, 6 p.m., here at the same location. Call this meeting adjourned.
Cool. Thank you all for joining us today.
Ms. Anders, are you retiring?
I'm resigning.
No.
When?
My last day is going to be on 24 January. So I